Hi, hello, I'm Jean Lézy, and you are listening F1 Weekly.
There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go. We're qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 869, January 25th. 2021, Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say LCH on Engelbert Humperdinck program. Should I go, should I stay? Toto has one more song to play. And now back to Cole Porter of podcasting.
On today's program, Ogier wins it again. Button to Williams. NBCSports.net decides to shut down. We've got more from Gary Sloan in thepitlane.com. And we have a surprise guest, ladies and gentlemen, in the Palatial Studios today with new motivation. And I quickly need to remind you that we need your contributions to keep this program on the air. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know you want to. Nath, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I am doing very good, sir. Thank you. We're getting closer and closer to the start of the 2021 preseason testing in Bahrain. So life is good. How are things on the left coast?
We're pumped up. We're excited. We have a special guest. We've got the in-flight burritos set out on platters for the people watching the show today. It's very exciting, Nas.
Very good, very good. And sir, another week has gone by and we still don't have a signature on the paper for LCH and Daimler-Benz and Mercedes-AMG owned Toto Wolff. What do you make of this situation, sir?
Well, I believe that they're loving each other, they're rubbing each other, and they're trying to come up with something. Like I said in the previous program, I believe LCH will be on the grid. He'll just have more gold teeth than previous visits.
Absolutely. How many does he have now? Seven?
Exactly.
There you go. Well, you know, like you, everybody has an opinion, and this one comes from Christian Albers. But I agree with you. He will be on the grid in Bahrain. According to Mr. Christian Albers, Hamilton's problem started in Bahrain last year, when George Russell did so well. And he basically said that George Russell literally and figuratively shattered Hamilton's plan. Now, obviously, there has to be a reason. What it is, I don't know. As someone once said, money is always an issue. And I'm sure some of it is related to Benjamin's. But you know, when you're talking a difference of $10-15 million or pounds, that's a lot of money even for somebody in the upper echelon of the F1 world like Lewis Hamilton. But another issue could be number of sponsor engagements LCH may have to meet. And I know he has stated, or at least I've heard him being quoted as that is an issue. And the question is, why hang out with board members of Petronas in Kuala Lumpur when you can hang out with Pussycat Doll in Malibu Beach? You know what I'm talking about? And one thing that is of interest to me is reports that one of the disagreements between the two parties is the length of contract. I find it hard to believe that Mercedes is offering Lewis, a record-breaking Grand Prix driver, one of a kind, just a one-year extension. That I do not buy. I think we will see him race for Mercedes this season. And once the season gets going, he will probably not give out much information of what went on behind closed doors, apart from the usual statement deals and agreements are confidential. But Mr. Toto Wolff, and you know, he had contracted virus, coronavirus, but he's now safe and sound, so that's good. He has finally made a comment on the situation, saying we expect Hamilton's John Hancock by Bahrain. The preseason testing starts in Bahrain instead of Circuit de Catalunya in Barcelona, and that will be happening in mid-March. Any surprises? I heard Ferrari has found 50 horsepower in their engine. Any surprises you expect in Bahrain?
Yes, I expect Fernando Alonso to top the timesheets.
Well, at least you and him have the same dream. But getting down to reality, do you expect anybody to upstage the Mercedes runaway freight train?
No, of course not. They're going to go on forever and ever. It's like Graceland, you know, Elvis is always home.
And all shook up, huh? Yeah, well, you know, reports are also saying that Honda is giving very positive feedback on their engine development to Red Bull. And Red Bull, for once, really need to start a season strong, you know. Because, you know, Max, if he can get a 10-20 point lead on Lewis after three or four races, then we can be in for a very exciting season. But we will see how it works out. Any final comments on LCH and the Mercedes contract saga before we move on?
No, not really. We all know that behind the scenes at this level of the corporate world is very complicated and there's a lot of strategies. I mean, Lewis Hamilton probably wants the rights of him in front of car 44. Now, does Lewis Hamilton own the rights of a JPEG of him standing in front of car 44, or does Mercedes own the rights of any JPEG of car number 44? It's all very complicated. There are so many things going on in the periphery of the millions and millions and millions. So we'll just leave all that to Carl Sagan, and I'd prefer to listen to more motorsports news from Nasser Hamid.
Oh, thank you, sir, and I have a good tune for you. Now we have Warsaw Concerto for Alfa Romeo. The Swiss-based team, run by Sauber, has become the first outfit to announce plans to unveil their 2021 Challenger, if it can be called that. As always, money talks, so the car will be introduced in the land of team sponsor Orlen, the Polish oil company that is paying for Robert Kubica to be their reserve driver. Team will also extend Ferrari engine deal. And I was reading just before we start recording that Alfa Romeo, now owned by this wonderful fourth largest car company in the world, Stellantis, with brands like Peugeot, Citroën, Opel, Dodge, and of course Alfa Romeo, that the Alfa Romeo sponsorship deal will end at the end of the season. And apparently, Mr. Carlos Tavares, who is the chairman of this, you know, new company, he's an amateur racer and a big racing fan. So hopefully he will extend the Alfa Romeo sponsorship. I just don't see this brand being associated with Formula One. And I say this because of their, you know, where they are in the marketplace in terms of how many cars they sell. So we'll see how it works out. Just like, you know, Istanbul was Constantinople, Sauber was once upon a time concept by Mercedes, then they were Sauber BMW, now they are Sauber Alfa Romeo. You know, what's next? Sauber Hyundai? I can see that. You know, kimchi and fondue together is a good combination. No, it's a new Swiss-Asian fusion, you know.
I can dig it, my brother.
Yes, sir. Okay, now, K-Mag, Kevin Magnussen, loses in F1 paddock but wins in legal docks. Last Thursday, a judge in Copenhagen ruled in favor of Magnussen after his ex-manager, Ms. Dorte Riis-Madsen, who had sued him because she was told, "You're fired," by K-Mag, and she wanted 20% of his career earnings because at one time that's some sort of a deal they had. But she lost the case, and Ms. Madsen has been ordered to pay about $90,000 in court costs. So it could be a nice payday for Kevin Magnussen. And talking of Kevin Magnussen, you know, this Saturday is the Daytona 24 hours, so I'm going there. Unfortunately, they don't allow any paddock access to anybody because of the circumstances, so that's understandable, but I would like to look at some of those racing cars, hear the sound, get into the racing groove. And I got to say this, man, they have this BMW M8, which is run by Bobby Rahal's team, and in the GTLM category or whatever it is, that is what I would call, very rarely I call a car like that. GT40 goes into that category, and so does the 1961 Ferrari 156 and the 1982 182, some of the Brabhams. These are what I call Mona Lisas of motorsport. So if you have not seen how a BMW M8 looks like in IMSA competition, check it out. Extremely beautifully designed vehicle. You know what I'm talking about, Mr. Rogers?
I do know what you was talking about, boss.
Yes. Now, as they say, you meet the nicest people on Honda. And who could be more kinder and gentler than the Austrian doctor of jurisprudence, Dr. Helmut Marko? He says Honda has agreed for Red Bull to keep using their F1 engines, or once upon a time, what was used to be GP2 engines, after the Japanese manufacturer's exit at the end of 2021. But this whole plan hinges on crucial FIA vote next week by other teams. Red Bull is pushing for a freeze to engine development to come into effect from 2022, so it can take over the IP of the Honda project and keep running the same power unit. If it works out, that will be good for them, but all it takes is one team in the group saying no, and then this whole thing will fall apart. Any comments on this, Mr. Rogers?
Yeah, there's no chance of this because it is construed as blackmail. And I know Red Bull is hoping that everybody's going to hold hands and sing Kumbaya and we love you, Christian, but this is not going to happen. It's not going to happen. Mercedes is not going to agree to this. So therefore, and Ferrari won't agree to this. I mean, development is part of the whole schmeal and schlamazzle. So good luck, Dr. Marko.
Well, according to Mr. Stefano Domenicali, the new CEO of Formula One, who took over from Chase Carey, and apparently he is talking to some other manufacturers. And you know, he used to be CEO of Lamborghini, which is part of the VW empire. So I will not be surprised if he's able to convince one of the VW brands, you know, Porsche, Audi. Audi's already going back to Le Mans, which is good for them. Maybe he can bring back Lamborghini or Porsche back into Formula One, which would be very, very nice. Now, at the start, you mentioned JB back at Williams. Jenson Button made his Grand Prix debut with that team in 2000. At the opening race, he was too young to rent a car, so he was driven around the track as a passenger to get to know the track before Friday's practice. Now, fast forward 20-plus years, he is now an advisor to the team. What is your take on this, amigo?
I'm not sure, to be honest with you. I think it's a little on the bizarre side. I think he has a lot to bring, and the Americans need a liaison officer, so to speak, between driver, engineering, team owners, funding, sponsorship, competitiveness, and winning. So I think Jenson Button can help.
I think he brings a lot of credibility to the program, has extensive experience in working with underperforming teams. I think he pretty much wrote the book on that, and I'm sure he can provide very good feedback. And who knows, he may also be a good tool when trying to raise sponsorship, because being associated with a world champion is not a bad way to advertise your products and services. Kind of hard to go and say, yeah, we sponsor this guy. He hasn't won any championship, but his daddy owns the team. Can you dig it? Yeah, I think that's not going to fly too far with the consumers. And they are very smart these days, especially in COVID times. JB is now based in Santa Barbara, California area, and has become a papito and he's also starting his Extreme E team. I think it's called JBXE. So we wish him all the best. Okay, sir. Sergio Perez in the Red Bull house in Milton Keynes. Milton Keynes is where I hang out when I'm in UK. And that's where we meet. I meet Mr. Brazier and now and then Dr. Mark. And then we do our own thing. And the evening ends up at the same Indian restaurant. One of the two India. One of them has shut down. Mr. Brazier advised me. But we can always find a good curry house anywhere in London town in UK. So Sergio Perez, he's now at Red Bull at least for 1 year. He is aware of the stampede he will face from the Max Factor. I think based on his experience in racecraft, and I think he's very good at racecraft just like Daniel Ricciardo, he will be much closer in performance to Max than Pierre Gasly and Alexander Albon. There may be occasions he may qualify and race ahead of Max, but I don't think we will see him do cage rattling at Red Bull like we saw at McLaren in 2007 and 1988. And if Sergio can prove me wrong, that will be great, because then we will have very, very exciting times at Red Bull. What's your take on, sir, possible cage rattling in Red Bull?
Well, I think Sergio is definitely going to hold his own. And Sergio, you know, being from Mexico, from Guadalajara, he can hold and take a lot of hot sauce. So when his in-flight burrito comes, you know, it's got jalapenos, it's got habaneros, it's got all the classical, mamma mia, that's a spicy meatball. And so what he's going to do, he's going to challenge Max. Oh yeah, try this sauce, my buddy. It's going to be exciting. It's going to be wonderful. 2021 is going to be laughs every day.
And what will he do if Max turns up the heat and turns him into an avocado?
Then we all move to Escondido.
There you go. Okay, sir. Moving on. COVID causing delays. The WEC Series World Endurance Championship planned season opener at Sebring on March 19 has been called off, which is very disappointing. The place is only 90 minutes from my casa, so that's disappointing. The series will now begin with a new race at the Autódromo do Algarve, Portimão in Portugal on April 4th, which I believe is, I don't know, an hour or so from where Dr. Miguel hangs out. The World Touring Car Championship has also delayed the start of their season. Races at the Hungaroring and Slovakia Ring in May have been pushed back, meaning the series visit to the Nürburgring Nordschleife on June 3rd to 5th will now open its season. Can you believe a season opening in June? What is this world coming to? IndyCar Racing, which IndyCar Series postponed its original season opener at St. Petersburg, which is only 20 minutes from where I am, Mr. Rogers, has now delayed the race, which took over as the first race, which is now the Barber Motorsports Park, and it's been pushed back a week to give the championship the benefit of a more preferable television slot. Now we come to the fate of MotoGP. Their season will start on the last weekend of March with back-to-back races at Losail Circuit in Qatar. The race in Austin has been postponed, but there might be a race in Finlandia, subject to circuit approval. And they used to do MotoGP races in Finlandia. You know, I saw a very interesting article a few years ago. I don't know if it was MotoGP, but it was definitely some sort of street race, motorcycle race. And part of the track used to run parallel to a railway line, not a very busy railway line. So for spectator stands, they would bring in some railway bogies and people can sit in them and watch the race. And there was a picture of it, black and white, a pretty cool idea, I think. Okay, I'm sure you heard that, and we mentioned, I think, that Toto Wolff had contracted COVID-19, but he's completed his quarantine period. He's now on the road to full recovery, so that's good news. And Sebastian Vettel, a lot of people are asking this question, is he still championship material? I say yes, or as they say in his country, yavol. Given the package, but it has to be a very good package like he had at Red Bull. And I am hopeful, and I really would like to see him win a race in a British Racing Green Aston Martin. But he did say he does not want to be a grandpa in Grand Prix racing and continue racing while in his 40s. He's got better things to do. Your take on Sebastian coming to Aston, doing something exciting?
We shall see. I mean, it's all up in the air now. We have to wait till Bahrain. We'll see where the Aston Martin package will be. Obviously, if it has any DNA left from the pink package of 2020, it's going to do well. But well and beating Lewis Hamilton and Mercedes at a championship are completely two different animals. So, and with Fernando coming back, Alpine, Aston Martin has a lot to accomplish and do. They're starting with a great driver, but can Vettel rise to the occasion? We shall see.
We shall see. And you know, while we're talking about COVID, this gentleman, Fausto Grassini, who runs the Grassini racing team in MotoGP, he is still in very serious condition from COVID. So we would like to wish him well and speedy recovery, and hope he can come back to the MotoGP paddock in the near future. Okay, sir, Mr. What we call Father Guido Sarducci of motorsports, meaning Antonio Giovinazzi. I mean, I was very surprised that he was not happy that he did not get a seat at Ferrari. Now, obviously, it's very disappointing if Ferrari does not hire you, but you got to look at your performance, what you're doing with what you have. And so he's quoted as saying, of course, I didn't take Ferrari's decision all that well. That seems obvious. I am still employed by Ferrari, and I thought there would be a chance for me to race for the Scuderia. Maybe it just wasn't the right time for me. Yes. But he is hopeful that he will once again on one day drive for them. And you know what? He is driving as a teammate to the old man of the sea in Formula One. And lately, second half of the season, he did a pretty decent job. But he did not really rattle Raikkonen's cage, so I don't know how he would be thinking that Ferrari will take him, maybe in the near future. Would you have some comments on Antonio Giovinazzi, Signor?
Well, certainly. I mean, he did not rattle Kimi. Kimi had some of the greatest starts of his career in 2020. I mean, I don't know if anybody remembers, but he had some awfully fantastic starts from last all the way to sixth place. So, I'm sorry, but I only remember Kimi. I don't remember Sarducci.
Yes, you're right. Kimi had some very great starts, and there's a lot of life in that guy, you know, and like David Coulthard said, the guy can go fast without even trying. So why sweat it out all day long in a gym like Michael Schumacher if you can still be as quick as anybody else? Okay, sir, you mentioned Monte Carlo Rally and your favorite team, Alpine F1 driver Esteban Ocon, did some driving in an Alpine A110 in the opening two stages of this year's Monte Carlo Rally. And sir, you know, on a personal note, I started motorsports interest with rally. The three big rallies in those days were, I think the biggest name was East African Safari and Monte Carlo Rally. And the third that was really big was the Acropolis Rally in Greece. And I followed all these events with a lot of interest. And in those days, there used to be the Ivory Coast Rally also, which was very popular. And Peugeot had some success there. And I remember rally used to be called Bandama Rally. So these are the rallies. One day, they are very much on my bucket list to one day go and watch these rallies. And Baja 1000 is very high on the list too. But anyway, going back to Monte Carlo, as you said, your homeboy Sebastian Ogier and a Toyota Yaris took his record-breaking win number 8. Very, very impressive. This was not only his 8th win in this event, it was also his 50th WRC win. So this is really very impressive the way he's going. Interestingly, there were 3 Toyotas in the top 5. So WRC and WEC working very well for them, unlike their foray into F1. And I have some news for you. I don't know if I told you this. A few years ago, I rented a Toyota Yaris in Austin on my way to the U.S. Grand Prix, and the car was made in your Shangri-La, Francia. I'm sure you know they have a Toyota has a factory in Belgium, near in France, near the Belgian border.
Yes, I'm aware of that, and that's close to where my family's from. Sí, bravo.
Yeah, that's very good. I remember I ran into some, I think he was a Japanese journalist. I don't know if it was Goodwood or Le Mans a few years ago, and he told me the Toyota factory is near the Belgian border. Okay, sir, now we come to Race for Diversity and Equality, powered by Penske, a team owned by Beth Peretta, who used to be motorsports manager at Dodge, will enter Swiss Miss Simona Di Silvestro at Indy this year. Technical support will be provided by Penske Racing. And as we all know, Mr. Penske means first-class business through and through. Simona is a competitive driver and has raced in IndyCars, Australian Supercars, and in American Junior Series. Some race fans will remember she was on the brink of winning the Formula Atlantic Championship, and that was at the season finale at Laguna Seca. And I was there, and actually we interviewed her shortly before the race. And what does she do in the race? She did a Lewis Hamilton from Interlagos 2007. There were about a dozen cars, I think maybe less than a dozen cars in the field, and all she had to do was basically finish anywhere in the top eight. But in the early laps, could have been the first lap, she tangled with a young Finnish driver, and that's where the music stopped for her championship aspirations. So that was a pretty, pretty sad move. I don't want to say a dumb move, I don't think she's dumb, but it was totally, totally uncalled for. Let's hope the ladies can put on a good show, which will be good for the driver and the team owner, and of course for the series. Sir, I am hoping this COVID situation is not getting better anytime soon. So I don't know what's going to happen, but I've been thinking, you know, because Monday, Memorial Day weekend is a holiday, maybe I should go to the Indy 500, if they allow spectators, that is. Because it's a fab... You've never been to the 500, right?
Correct. I have never been invited to attend the Indianapolis 500.
Well, you might want to call Roger Penske or Robin Miller, but man, you got to do this once in your life. If you cannot do that, then take a trip to Fontana in SoCal and attend an IndyCar race. You will be blown away by the speed. What is amazing is how quickly they go up to full speed and how quickly they slow down to get into one of those four turns. Very, very impressive. Okay, sir, more hope for your nation of France. This is coming in a segment we called Faces Going Places. You know, last year this kid from nowhere, I was really not aware of him. His name is Theo Pourchaire. He came into Formula 3 and he was, I think, like 16 years old at that time and ended up the season second place in the championship, only 3 points behind another rookie, the guy who won the championship, Oscar Piastri, who was from Melbourne, Australia, and he won in his rookie season. And I think both these youths have a great future. Pourchaire subsequently made his... Going to make his debut. He actually raced in a couple of races last year and did not do much. But this year he is moving up to F2 with ART team, with whom he was in Formula 3. And ART, you know, was started out by Nicolas Tard and Frederick Vasseur, who is now at Sauber. And Mr. Theo graduated from karts to car racing, single-seater, in 2018. He raced in French Formula 4 and then joined the Sauber Young Driver Program and won the German Formula 4 Championship, which is where I think Michael Schumacher's son Mick also started. Keep an eye on this name, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, Theo Pourchaire. And I think Oscar Piastri is also one to watch. Oscar, because he won the Formula Renault Euro Cup, is part of the Renault Driver Development Program. So I'm looking for new talent, you know. I mean, we have to find some new talent in the next year or two. People who can rattle the cage of Max and Charles Leclerc. And somebody will come sooner or later. There's no question in my mind.
Outstanding, Nasser. Keep up the good work. Great news on that French young driver So why don't we take a quick break and hear from Gary Sloan.
Hello, listeners. My name's Gary Sloan. This is this week's edition of In the Pit Lane. So as the world of F1 awaits news of Lewis Hamilton's contract signing, speculation mounts over his alleged pay demands, which has inevitably led to debates over driver salaries. When F1 finance monitor Business Book GP published their 2020 report of driver salaries, it mirrored the championship with front runners and midfield and those trailing at the back. Pole position of the big earners who can expect to earn between 16 million to 47 million euros. The midfield boys are on 4 to 9 million euros, with the rest of the pack on between a miserable 500,000 euros to 2 million. It has to be said, bonuses and sponsorship money are not considered. So with these figures, it seems strange that the teams have agreed in principle to a salary cap of 30 million euros from 2023 for both drivers, subject to approval by the World Motorsport Council. It's all a bit of a red herring, as the only teams to go above the limit currently are Mercedes and Ferrari. Leaving aside Mercedes for now, Ferrari next season, with the departure of high earner Vettel, will drop into the safe zone. Vettel's expected pay cut to join Aston Martin will keep that team free of the budget cap. The other teams except Red Bull are well short of the limit. For the drivers, it looks like the days of the big pay packets are history, and as an indication of the team's mindset, the drivers themselves were not consulted on any proposed cap. Alfa Romeo boss Frank Tos has said, "For my taste, the drivers earn too much money anyway. If I had a say, I would give them a maximum of $10 million. They should be happy about the wonderful jobs they have." Racing Point boss Otmar Szechner does not believe that setting a salary limit would drive the big names away from the sport. "If that happens, will the superstars do something else? I believe that even having the drivers' salaries within the cap, their salaries would still be higher than what they would get at other racing series." Haas boss Günther Steiner in his usual way summed it up thus: "I have nothing against a driver cap or a driver salary cap, whatever you want to call it. I don't see a problem for us in it, because we are so far off it, whatever it will be." Toto Wolff, meanwhile, has struck a different tone, but confirmed that, relatively speaking, the big bucks are over, when he commented, "We've said we don't want to lose the superstars out of this sport, so it needs to be a gradual introduction from 2024 onwards, so that the future generations of drivers end up on a more sensible level, and considering that, we have a cost cap on the team." Lewis Hamilton's situation does raise a potential problem, as he has global appeal, which is incredibly valuable to Mercedes, and understandably the driver will expect to be paid accordingly, but he may well have left the sport before 2024. So there could be unintended consequences with the budget cap. Roman Grosjean, who is director of the Grand Prix Drivers Association, highlighted the issue. "If we cap drivers' salaries, we break the whole ladder of motorsport. Who would invest money in a young driver programme to pay for their racing if they can't get their money back by taking a percentage of the drivers' high wages? That's the debate. Personally, I wasn't necessarily against the idea of having drivers' salaries in the budget cap, but then for sure, you would question what manufacturer or manager would come and spend a fortune on a driver only to take back 20% of something that is capped, so never getting their money back. This is truly relevant, as getting into F1 requires a huge investment, probably the highest in any sporting profession. Most drivers start the journey at a young age, honing their skills go-karting for typically 7 to 10 years at a cost of around £500,000. But this is just the start. Toto Wolff was saying a team can expect to invest $8 million to develop and manage a young driver into a potential candidate for a Formula One seat. So if the driver doesn't make the cut, the investment is effectively a loss. That's something worth considering when deciding salaries. On a footnote, in the new post-COVID-19 world, with the financial prudence heading Formula One's way, the young guns of Leclerc, Russell and Norris can only look on with a what have might have been at the fortunes amassed by the old guard starting alongside him on the grid. Sebastian Vettel, $120 million. Kimi Räikkönen, $250 million. Fernando Alonso, $280 million. And Sir Lewis Hamilton, $285 million. So that's it for another week. More details at inthepitlane.com. Until next week, stay safe, stay well.
Gary, another outstanding job. Thank you. The check is in the mail. And now, our special guest who just finished the in-flight burrito, take it away.
Okay, folks, I'm here with Mr. Jean. Let's see, Jean, thank you so much for your time. How are you today?
I'm fine. Thank you so much.
Good to see the LAC name winning again in motor racing. Please tell us about Giuliano's progress and how much are you involved in managing his career at this point?
It was for the Formula 2 season for Giuliano, very difficult season. But so far, he managed to make some progress race after race. But for him, what was very difficult is every race is to have a different teammate.
Okay. You had the best present for your 31st birthday. Please tell us what you remember most from that wonderful day and evening in Montreal.
You know, it happened every Grand Prix. I checked last time. I did almost 2,000 laps leading a Grand Prix, and I won only once. So it was for me a freedom, you know, to pass the finish line as a leading driver, and I've been extremely happy. And the night after the race, I didn't celebrate really, but when I went in a restaurant, the whole restaurant stand up and applause. So that was a great memory for me.
Yes. Okay, your family originally is from Sicilia. Do names like Nino Vaccarella and Targa Florio mean anything to you?
Yes. Yeah. I'm a big fan of the old time. So Vaccarella for us in Sicily, it was really the Tazio Nuvolari of the Italy. So we respect him, we know him, and I like this story.
Okay, you and Gerhard Berger were two great characters and teammates at Ferrari. What is the story of overturning Jean Todt's car after lunch at Fiorano?
we had this moment with Gerhard, who was, you know, when we are young, when we are... a bit crazy. So we had this small inconvenient with Jean Todt's car.
Did he say anything to you guys?
No, he was very upset. He was very upset, and I understand, because we did it. We didn't really did it in purpose, but playing like that at the end, it was. We had this accident, you know.
Okay, Phoenix, Arizona. The heat is very hot there, and so was your performance in a Tyrrell against the McLaren Honda of Ayrton Senna. That race must have some great memories for you.
Yes, because it was the first time I drove the Pirelli tires. We knew we had this extra grip in qualifying, but for the race we were not sure, because the spirit of Pirelli at the time was to do the whole Grand Prix without pitting and without changing the tires. But I didn't have the experience with this tire. So when I went there, I was completely I was not sure at all about if it was good or not. And then it was a fantastic surprise, because I qualified fifth. I had a super start and then a top second place.
Yeah, it was absolutely amazing. Ken Tyrrell was a championship winning driver. How was your personal and professional relationship with him?
For me, was the best team to start, because he was like a father. He gave me a lot of confidence, always close to me, and that was absolutely important for my progress.
Okay, Ralf Schumacher once said to me that every second word out of Eddie Jordan's mouth was the F.
Okay, Giuliano. Ah, je suis chez Ferrari, il y a plein de monde, on t'attend tous.
Okay, Ralf Schumacher once said to me that every second word out of Eddie Jordan's mouth was the F-bomb. What was your experience in dealing with EJ?
He was the key of my success, because he took me after my Formula 3000 championship in 88, where I was really nowhere. And he gave me a winning car. He introduced me to the Formula 1 teams. He made the deal to race one Grand Prix with Tyrrell. And then we signed for the rest of the season. So really, For me, Eddie Jordan means everything.
Okay, you had a contract with Williams when the phone call came from Maranello. Driving for Ferrari, was that purely an emotional decision or was there more to it?
No. I had a contract and it was clear I was going to drive for Williams. But because Williams didn't take the decision of the date we had on this contract, it becomes option. And Ferrari decided to give me a strict contract, a fixed contract. So we pull out of the Williams contract.
Okay. And finally, what's a day like these days in the life of Jean Alesi?
You know, the time is changing, but my time was for sure extremely exciting for me. But I'm sure if now we ask Charles how he feels, he will say, oh, it's a great time for me, it's very exciting, I love the cars. So Formula 1 is Formula 1, and because we are using machines, we cannot compare the previous time.
Okay. I just have one request. Can you say, hi, I'm Jean Alesi, and you are listening to F1 Weekly?
Hi, hello, I'm Jean Alesi, and you are listening to F1 Weekly.
Merci beaucoup, sir. Thank you.
So, Nas, any thoughts on the upcoming test in Bahrain?
Well, you know, we definitely need a regime change, but we don't want to change just for the heck of it. We want what you call competition, cage rattling. So I am hopeful that either Charles Leclerc with 50 more horsepower can stick it to the car number 44 and car number 77. And I've always been a Honda fan. Senna's 3 championships came with Honda. I would love to see them have a driver win a championship with their engine. And the driver in question is obviously super uber talented Mr. Max. So that's where the focus is. I'm also very interested in seeing how the Aston Martin project will move on. And I think Lawrence Stroll means serious business. If Sebastian Vettel needs some motivation, it will be every time he sees a red car while sitting in his British racing green car. So these are my expectations. From a rookie point of view, this Japanese kid, Yuki Tsunoda, man, this kid, you know, it's very hard to win a race in your first full season in F2, GP2, but he won as a rookie, and he's like only, I don't know, 18, 19 years old, very young. He won 3 races and had a pole or two also. In 2 years, Mick Schumacher did not score a single pole, and this year, despite winning the championship, he only won 2 compared to Yuki's 3, and Yuki lost one certain win because his team radio was not working. And because of inexperience, he did not pay attention to the pit board sign. So he came in very late to change the tires and lost that win. But he had a very dominating performance that day. So this is what I'm looking for in the 2021 season. And hope all of this is proven when the preseason testing starts.
Absolutely, Nas. Bahrain season testing is going to be our small little window into the future.
And I'll be at Daytona, sir, so I'm really looking forward to. This will be my first race since Daytona 24 Hours of last year. That's a long, dry spell. Not good.
Don't worry. We'll all be getting vaccines. Herd immunity is on its way, Nasser. So we must have patience with the system, but motorsports will return in full living color with Fernando at the top. So on that note, Nas, I want to thank Gary. I want to thank you. I want to thank all the listeners that stick with us. I'll see you at the hot dog stand.
Thank you for listening, and bye now.